This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 25. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Now, you have to forgive me this week, chaps, as I've got a little bit of a sore throat, so maybe I'm sounding more husky, maybe I'm going to stop speaking halfway through the show, I don't know. So, a bit of drama. Can he make it to the end of the show?
Place your bets now.
How are you, Berners?
Very good, thank you. Very good indeed.
I hear there's a news item coming up which is quite exciting. You're setting records.
Yeah, got on the back foot and just let loose. But having played on it for about 4 months, you'd hope that I'd kind of get to grips with it.
You're the world's first batting studio specialist batsman.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's all about those anchors and just knowing the methodical procedure of the machine.
And how's it going with you, Gareth?
Yeah, all good. Thank you very much. We've got a County Cup final here this afternoon, which I'm looking forward to watching, between ourselves and Kings, who have had a really good year. Kings Taunton, who have had a really good year. So, yeah, it should be a nice end of the season for the under-14s. Hopefully a win for Millfield.
What format is that?
40 overs today, yeah. So, it's on a pretty good wicket and the sun's shining, so it should be good.
So we're thinking lots of runs and lots of exciting action throughout the day.
It depends, isn't it? You know, this is where pressure comes in.
Yeah, that's true.
And a big game, fantastic cricket pitch, lots of people watching. You just never know. And it'll be, I think, the side that wins it will probably be the one that manages their nerves best.
Well, yes, and that brings us on nicely to the recent Champions Trophy final, which they did manage to get a game in, England and India. And unfortunately, from my point of view, but fortunately for most of the people probably listening to this podcast, India came out the victors. So was that a pressure thing, do you think, Gareth?
I think it was. I mean, you know, firstly, you have to ask questions about not having a reserve day for an ICC World event. I think that's an interesting concept in its own right. I know we're under a lot of pressure in terms of timescale because in the English season there's a lot of big cricket coming up, but I think to have such a great tournament, everybody's really enjoyed, to be decided in a fashion that wouldn't have been ideal was a bit disappointing personally. But as it is, I think pressure did play its part really, and I felt that England probably choked a little bit under the pressure because they had the game won a couple of times. Mm. But also, it's difficult to judge, but I think, you know, Dhoni's influence within it shouldn't be underestimated as well. And so I think it's a combination of the two. But ultimately, you've got to look at the way that England played, and probably they, if they'd have played it again and reviewed it again, they'd come out on top more times than not.
From the outside, it does seem like Dhoni has moulded a side in his own image, confident and being able to play under a pressure situation and put opposition under pressure and give them the chance to crack. England did crack, but it was because I think India were just driving forwards and confidently going for it no matter what, weren't they?
They were, and that's a sign of good leadership, isn't it? You know, every really good coach, every really good captain, and often in international cricket anyway, the combination of those two put together, the team generally plays in the image of those two. And I think the combination of Dhoni and Fletcher is a heady mix that's gone really well. And the team have gone out there and played in their image, as you quite rightly say. And he's a cool customer, Dhoni. We see it game in, game out in international cricket and in IPL with him winning games from nowhere. So it's to be expected, I suppose, that an Indian team that he's leading will never be beaten until they're actually, you know, the game's over and they'll keep going and you never know and come out on top in tight situations.
It's simple. If they are losing, he merely drops the gloves and has a little bowl himself and turns it all round.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Having that belief that you can change the game, even with a thing that he does practice it. I've seen him bowl quite a lot in nets, actually, which again shows a lot about the bloke, I think, in terms of, you know, trying to save his bowlers, making sure that the practice is meaningful every time his team go out there. And if that means him having to bowl to make up some bowling numbers, then he'll do it. So, but to have the confidence to take your gloves off and actually positively impact on a game of cricket shows not just that he can bowl, which he can, but just the belief that he has in himself that he can affect a game of cricket. And that very much rubs off on other people around the team.
I think there was a good lesson in the game as well, something that you often forget when you're out there, is that cricket's a funny old game. You had Sharma, I think, bowling to someone, and it just looked like he was literally just running in, and England were just cruising. They were just picking him off to the sweeper and picking up one or two, and at that stage, they didn't need to do anything more. And then he got, I think he was on a hat-trick, and he bowled like, it was almost like a long hop and something else. He got two wickets, but those two wickets, for me, that was the defining part of the game. Just even, I know that what went on after was still pretty inexplicable from England, but the fact that two quick wickets, you know, it really did change the dynamics of how the England guys were coming out to bat, and it was just literally all changed within two balls. So remember that on Saturday afternoon, couple of balls, and suddenly it's absolutely changed the swing of things.
But I was going to ask you, Gareth, you know Duncan Fletcher well, having worked with him for a number of years. So I think the influence of Dhoni is very clear, you know, that calmness under pressure, that kind of in-the-game situation. Where is the Fletcher influence? Is it down with the tactics?
I think it's his streetwiseness and also his knowledge of English conditions and those grounds in particular that were played on during the ICC tournament, the Oval, Edgbaston and Cardiff. Mm-hmm. Cardiff in particular, in that he spent some time down there as a very successful Glamorgan coach before he came into the England setup, and has always lived down there and kept very close ties with the club. So would have known that venue inside out, would have been able to advise accordingly on that. And of course, you know, the Oval and Edgbaston he knew very well too during his 8 years as England coach. So he'd have brought that experience in, but it's just his way that he looks at potential problems and comes up with solutions. And often he'd go quiet for a day or so and then come out with absolute genius. And I know that he's still doing that because I've spoken to a few of the guys that are working around him now, and he never stops learning, he never stops analysing things, and it's a fantastic foil for the extroversion and on-field leadership of Dhoni.
A lesson for coaches at club level as well. What kind of influence you can have on the players and the tactics when they're out in the middle. And what about handling pressure as well, though? Is that something you can develop the ability to deal with?
I think so. And pressure is a really interesting thing because it generally makes us speed up, doesn't it? And rush our thinking and rush our movements. And one of the best things I've heard recently is a sort of strategy about how you can prevent pressure from negatively impacting upon you. And so, for example, you know, just pressing the pause button for 10 seconds or so, you know, taking a different view. And often I talk about having that bird's eye view of the cricket field when you're batting, instead of seeing that one level view that we have from the centre of a pitch. Take yourself up 100 foot and look at the field and you see a lot more space. That's an example of a helicopter view, builds perspective, which we can sometimes lose track of when we're in the middle of a game. So pressing the pause button, asking yourself some pretty basic questions and taking a helicopter view are really good ways of managing pressure. And we can build that into our training sessions. We can build that into our one-to-one sessions. We can build that into our net sessions. And the best coaches actually do that. And that's something that very much is the consistency between Fletcher and Flower, is the ability to build those factors and those strategies and those coping strategies into their training sessions, which is why they're two of the best coaches that have graced this world in modern times.
Berners, how do you react under the pressure of a match situation?
How do I rank?
React.
How do I... I don't know. It's yeah. I guess that sometimes the scenarios which occur are quite fast moving, so you often don't have time to think. I like to just I try to think. Often those moments in between overs, if you're batting, you can kind of reassess plans. But I guess it's we often speak about communication between teammates, and if you can share more and more information as you go along, you don't suddenly hit a massive conundrum of not knowing what's going on. So yeah, I guess some things you can anticipate as well. I think that's a good trait to have as a professional sportsman in any sport, is to anticipate certain things are going to happen, and then you can become a little bit more reactive to them, maybe quicker. But yeah, it's hard. One of those, I think it's probably the biggest thing in all facets of life, isn't it? Pressure that it happens to people is watching the Wimbledon tennis, which has started. And obviously our big guy over here, Andy Murray, he gets talked up, and literally that will come down to pressure. He's got the ability, he's got the shots, he knows how to serve and how to hit off the baseline. But will the pressure of certain situations get to him? Will he suddenly think, I've got to win this because everyone in this whole place is rooting for me? Or will he just suck it all in and deliver his core skills? So, yeah, pressure, it's a strange one, I guess. But me personally, I'd like to think I deal with it quite well, yeah.
Okay, I think that's enough Champions Trophy talk, because although I've been impressed by India, I've also been depressed by England's loss. So let's wrap up this section with our yes-no round, the chance for Gareth and I to just say yes or no to three questions that Berners poses to us, no matter how much more that we want to say. So, Berners, you've got the yes-no questions this week. Fire away.
First question. Poor weather makes for interesting cricket.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Grassroots cricket is most suited to 2020.
No.
No.
Third question. Darwin has the greatest facial hair in cricket since W.G. Grace.
Oh, yes.
I think so, yes. It's a cracker. I love it. I think it's only good for the game.
Time now for the mailbag. And of course, every week you send in your questions to us, and we answer them in as much detail as we can, and the best question of the week gets a chance to win a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you're in charge of the questions this week. What have we got?
Our first question comes in from Philip, and he's noticed that in the international game in spin bowling, that they rely heavily on the amount of topspin and dip they're able to generate, and that they aren't bothered with lots of side spin and drift. And he's just asking, is that their personal style, or is dip actually the most useful in terms of aerodynamics? Because in his thinking, bowling with a lot of side spin and being able to drift the ball is going to help in confusing the batsman and maybe shift their head and get them thinking different things and not playing down the right line. So his question basically is what's the main objective of a spinner in this case?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I can't say it's something that I've particularly noticed. I guess if you're a spinner, you want to use every tool that's available to you. That's not just turn off the pitch, that's drift in the air and dip as well. Everything that you can to deceive the batsman, because you haven't got the pace of a quicker bowler, so you need every tool available to you. Is this something you notice, Gareth, that it's more about dip than it is about drift when it comes to the top end?
I think it's a brilliant question, I have to say, really nicely broken down. I would say the pitches that are played in one-day cricket are notoriously, obviously the final was an exception because it did spin, but the pitches in one-day cricket are notoriously flat because of the pressure of television, and they want high scoring. So we're seeing a lot of pitches that won't be advantageous to spin the ball on hugely, and I don't know whether it's because the pitches aren't spinning or whether it's because the bowlers are saying, well, the pitches aren't going to spin, so I'm going to bowl and try and deceive people with dip more, why we're seeing it. But you know, my experience of quite a few one day internationals, 100 plus that I was close enough to, I would say that we played on three or four spinning wickets out of a lot of them because of the pressure that the TV companies want in terms of a spectacle and the national governing body. So I think the pitches do play a part. I haven't noticed in the ball orientation that side spin has been taken off of the ball. I just think it's the way that the balls react and also the way that the balls react off of the pitch. I don't think that if you look at a Graham Swan, he's not trying to bowl more topspin now than he would do previously. And he'll certainly be bowling a lot of side spin and topspin combinations in the Ashes series coming up. Same with Treaders as well. You know, he was definitely trying to put some side spin on the ball. And that was evident in the final when the ball was spinning. So I just think it's the nature of the pitches. I think that's the biggest factor for me. I don't think anybody's trying not to spin the ball sideways. I just think it's because the pitches are flat because of the pressures that come from television and from national governing bodies to make a spectacle of 50-over cricket.
Bernard, sir, where does your you bowl a bit of spin? A few tweakers? What do you like to see? Do you like to see it drift and dip?
Oh, if I could, mate. Well, I'm a left arm orthodox, so any spin I can get is normally just go with the angle. But I just find that, especially in amateur cricket, I mean, I try to spin it obviously, and you try to get a bit of drift and all the rest of it. But just getting your flight and your length right is my biggest asset. I think I often just bore people to death. I think, but. As a left-arm spinner, yep, getting the ball going away from a right-hander and just creating that angle of the ball coming in and then leaving him going around the wicket is the ideal delivery for me. Whether I do that much remains to be seen.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's very hard to play, and especially if you're playing on a flat pitch, you know, it's not about how much the ball turns. It's about what the ball does in the air and how you can knock the batsman off what he thinks is happening. You're trying to put him off, aren't you? And that's the way you're going to do it, using whatever tools you have available to you.
Good left arm spinner like a gold mine, I tell you, mate. Not enough of them in the international game at the moment, I always think. I mean, how many left arm spinners did you see in the ICC trophy?
No, I agree with that. And you've got Jadeja, obviously. I think the lad from South Africa is actually quite a good bowler. He's done really well in 2020 cricket out there. I think he's gone really well, and I'm looking forward to him doing more in the future and watching him more in the future. Certainly from an England perspective, we could do with one, couldn't we? You know, it would definitely help us when we go away from home, and it might give us another option in our team when we play at home as well.
Yeah. It's just the angle. It's just totally, when you're a batsman, it's what's evident due to them not playing is that there aren't many of them about, and players aren't typically facing the ball coming from that angle with it turning. It's a bit like facing a good leg spinner, and that's, you know, it's a great asset to have in a team. I always think a good chuck the ball to a left arm spinner, and you often see in the cricket I play with is that the left arm spinner will often be a 50-60 year old guy who's still plying his trade in, you know, a decent standard. He can't field and he can't bat, but they'll chuck it to him all 8 or, you know, 12 overs every single week, and it's effective.
Yep, just throws it up and watches the carnage.
Yep. I always say when they hit me for 6, I chuck it up even higher the next one and higher again, and they can keep hitting me for 6 and I'll win the battle eventually, because it's a lot easier for me to keep tossing it up than it is for them to keep, you know, finding a maximum.
And that was the Eddie Hemmings view, wasn't it? To when he used to get hit and hit back over his head in particular, he'd take a bit more pace off and... I think it worked until he came up against Kapil Dev one day at Lord's.
What, and the ball was found down in Baker Street.
What's the next question, Bernard?
The next question comes in from Dean, and it's a question specifically to Mark. He's saying that he mentioned the other week about philosophy for coaching fast bowlers. He was wondering if you have a philosophy for coaching batters. So there you go, Gareth.
Yeah, really interesting one. And I'll be honest, it's an evolving philosophy. And I think The more I understand about individuality in batting, and particularly in stances and where contact areas need to be, the more flexible I'm becoming in my approach. And rather than having a philosophy which is overarching and will impact upon everybody, I have a philosophy that I will watch players really well, observe and notice what they do, and then work within their parameters rather than getting them to work within mine. So that's my first element of my philosophy, which has definitely been a shift in the last 2 years from where I was previously, which I think is a positive shift. And certainly the results that the guys appear to be getting, I'm pretty confident that's the way forward. Second one is to look to score always. So to have positive intent running throughout the body, because it's easier to move from a positive mindset into a leave or defend. It's very difficult to have a defensive mindset and then as the ball's on its way, turn that into a positive one when you're batting. So it's something that I picked up from Greg Chappell, who I spent quite a lot of time with a few years ago, and he talked to me about having the intention to score off every ball and then going down rather than trying to make it go up. And the other things are more sort of spin and seam orientated, really. I think one of the best things that I've heard, and I've mentioned it again on this show, is my dad talks about the three W's when he talks to young kids about how to set up their batting and how to teach young kids. And he calls about the three W's, which is watch it, wait for it, and whack it, which I think is also a pretty good one to have. So that's a sort of a three-pronged attack in my philosophy to batting. I watch, I observe, and I listen to make sure that the things that I'm teaching them are within the frame of reference and the preferences of the players that I work with. The second one is to have an intention to score always, and you can shift that intention into a more, I suppose, defensive intention easier than going the other way around. And when working with young kids, you know, the watch it, wait for it, whack it. The final one is about messaging, I suppose. And I just did a session with a young lad about half an hour ago. And if you think about Ricky Ponting, who I think was a magnificent player and somebody who was really, really tough to bowl at. And what he did when he left the ball, he left the ball with a real positive intent, going back to that Greg Chappell thing. And it was almost convincing you that if you bowled another ball in that area, which previously he left, that he was going to come back into it and drive it on the up or whatever. And he'd be sending a message back to the bowler every single ball that he faced. And often we see guys being very timid at the wicket. And when you watch the Haydens and the Petersons and the Pontins of this world, every ball they're sending back a positive message, and they're putting the bowler under pressure and they force them into making errors. And so that would be my fourth element of my philosophy.
Would you say that it's when you're talking about coaching batsmen now, it's that technique has become a lot more of a flexible phrase than it used to be, and it's about more, you know, a wider things than just creating people from a template?
I completely do, and I think it's going to move even more that way, David, over the course of the next 10 years as people switch on to preference and individuality a little bit more. And it's, you know, the exposure into television and seeing cricket around the world on a more regular basis instead of just the cricket that was played in your country, which is what I grew up watching, you know, with Peter West and those guys on the BBC. We now see cricket all over the world, and as a result, we're broadening our horizons always. And instead of trying to fit everybody into a template, we're beginning to recognise that actually people move in different ways, people think in different ways, people play in different ways, and it's actually the coach's job to work with the player, opposed to the player's job to work with the coach.
That's very true. Of course, there is a counter argument that some people say that is, well, if he'd have done it in this way, then how many more runs could he have scored?
Yeah, there is, and it's, you know, it's not always the way they do it is the right way. But what I'm saying is there'll be clues within the way that they go about stuff which tell you how you need to then enhance their game. Because a coach's job is to add value, isn't it? It's not to keep people exactly the same, and it's certainly not to reduce the impact of a player, but it's to help broaden the awareness and the understanding of that player about the way that they do things to make them more effective. So you're absolutely right. We still have to, the aim of being a coach is to add value. But it's important that we do it within the frame of reference of the player. And it, a lot of the time, that player wouldn't understand their own frame of reference. And, you know, they'd be more than happy to change something just for change's sake. So we've got to be very sure about what we're doing. And that's good coaching. You know, that's good coaching is good teaching. And we can all reflect back on people that have had an influence on our lives. And very rarely have they been the ones that have jumped in and just told you exactly the same thing as they tell everybody else.
Okay, so that's enough for the questions round this week, and it's time for us to head to the newsroom for this week's Pitch Vision News.
Thank you, David. Hi, I'm Daisy Cutter, and this is the Pitch Vision News. Belvoir School in Wandsworth, London, have become the first UK state school to adopt Pitch Vision. The new PV1 system will be used as part of the school's specialist cricket coaching club, run and managed by Mr. Speller. Robbie White, a Harrow schoolboy and long-term Pitch Vision user, has been selected for the Middlesex Second 11. The 17-year-old batsman worked his way through the country's age group system and has been extensively coached on Pitch Vision at Harrow School Cricket Centre. Congratulations, Robbie. The Pitch Vision World Pace League is tight at the top so far this year. Australia are the nation with the edge. The bowlers are averaging 84.2 kilometres per hour on Pitch Vision systems, but England and India are maintaining the drama with their respective averages of 80.6 kilometres per hour and 76.4 kilometres per hour. Check out the Pitch Vision interactive pages for the full national tables. Pitch Vision Academy has recently supported the ICC's search for a new coach for the Ugandan national team. The Pitch Vision community gave a strong response with more than a dozen high-quality applicants put forward. Applications closed on the 23rd and the UCA are set to make a decision shortly. And finally, Pitch Vision's In Cricket Simulator news. Our own Berners has been setting records. This time, the left-handed short format specialist smashed 28 in an over on the batting simulator at Bloomsbury Lanes, London. This is a current world record. For more details on these stories, check out the show notes at pitchvision.com. That's the Pitch Vision news for this week. I've been Daisy Cutter, and now it's back to the panel.
Thanks, Daisy, and that's a pretty good effort from Berners, isn't it, Gareth?
Oh, that's awesome, mate. 28 off and over. That's like 3 years of runs for me at the moment, mate. And you've got them in six balls. That's a great effort. So well done you. And I should imagine there was a serious leg side preference involved in some of that.
Some of it might have been slightly skewed in that direction, Gareth, yes. predominantly in the V, but just all about picking your areas, being decisive and using your anchors nicely. A couple of light beverages were sourced prior to the innings as well, just to calm any nerves, and literally latched on.
Fantastic, mate. That's a real achievement, and it's nice to hear you talking positively about your cricket for a change, which is good.
Yeah, next time you're in London, you'll have to come down and we'll have a little duel on the simulator.
I know the result of that one already, mate, and it won't be me on top in that contest, I can assure you. I've gone very much downhill in the last couple of years of my cricket, so
You can bat out for a draw in it then, and I'll take it to the cleaners.
Again, that might be beyond me, but I'll give it a go.
Playing for the Red Inca. And Gareth, one thing I know that you're still top of the form with is the soapbox. So let's have 60 seconds of some Mark Garraway goodness without interruption. Over to you.
Well, this week I'm going to talk about coaches being sacked, because there seems to be a bit of a thing going on which is very reminiscent of the football culture. And obviously I don't know the ins and outs that sat behind the sacking of Chris Adams, Ian Salisbury from Surrey, and then obviously very high profile Mickey Arthur from Australia. But you know, I would hate if cricket got into the realms of sacking people as and when, and halfway through series or halfway through seasons or even in preparation for series, because It's just not good form, and there's normally a lot of situations that sit behind a coach that they might not be totally in control of or even understand, and certainly the fallout of the Australian situation is going to be very, very interesting. Obviously, wish Darren Lehman the best with his overall career, but no success in his first two series in charge, obviously. I just want to see that administrators support coaches rather than just getting rid of them, because that's something that's damaged football in the last few years.
That was some interesting timing, both with Surrey and with...
I mean, you can only assume that there was some serious stuff going on that needed to be done, and I can't criticise the decisions because I don't know enough about the information that sat behind them. But I would hate it if we got to a situation where we were becoming football-like.
Unfortunately, probably a lot to do with Warnergate, right?
Well, I think it's got a bit to do with that. I mean, there's been a lot of things that have happened, you know, the homework thing, Warnergate. There's a definite power struggle going on inside the changing room. I mean, that's very evident from the body language and some of the messaging that's coming out from the players. You know, Clark Watson thing doesn't seem to be sitting particularly easily in that changing room at the moment. And whilst successful Australian sides have also had, you know, a little bit of wrangling on the inside and it hasn't done them any harm, I think this is a different quality of Australian side that would probably need harmony in order to be competitive. So it's going to be interesting viewing.
Well, and of course, the difference is that, you know, they're losing.
Yeah, they have the quality of play. You know, when Warney was rucking with a few of them, you know, you had 11 world-class players in there and six people
doing the business,
in Australia,
yeah.
Whereas yeah. You know, now you haven't.
OK, that's the end of the show for another week. But before we go, we just need to do our little bit of housekeeping, which is, of course, to decide on a winner of this week's Pitch Vision Academy online coaching course from pitchvision.com. And we have the two questions, Philip's questions about bowling spin and Dean's question to Gara's about coaching batters. So which one did you prefer, Gara's?
Well, I know I say they're good questions every week, but I reckon these were right up there in the top drawer of the questions that we've been asked. And in other weeks, Dean, you'd have come out on top, definitely. But Philip's question I really liked because it posed it from a number of angles, showed a good deal of that understanding of the area himself, and really got us thinking about, you know, why is it that the ball isn't spinning, or it appears that bowlers have changed their ways in one day, which I don't think is necessarily true. But so Philip wins it this week. But Dean, seriously good question, mate. And in other weeks, would have come up trumps.
Yeah, so perhaps motivation to send in another question, but it was a good answer anyway, so, you know, you can't lose out. You know, this podcast is completely free. It's unbelievable. Now, Berners, if someone wanted to send in their question, get it answered, and also win a prize, what would they need to do?
Give us a call. Our number here is 020-88-167-691, or drop us an email, and our address for that is coach@pitchvision.com.
It is. Our Twitter is at PB Cricket Coach. Our Facebook, which is pretty busy these days. Lots of videos going up there, articles, comments, things going on. Very exciting there. Facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy. If you want to listen to the show every week, and as I mentioned, it's completely free and packed full of coaching and playing goodness, you can head over to iTunes. Do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. Find us in there. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you want to use something else, it's available in all good podcatching programs by going to pitchvision.com/academy, clicking on the podcast link. The instructions are in there. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers, guys.
And my throat survived.
Well done, mate. Congratulations.